Ủa? Start again. So hi everyone, thanks so much for joining us today. My name is Andrea Robles and I'm from the Office of Research and Evaluation at CNCF. And as you all know, our webinar series is one way we share our ongoing research and findings. And today we are very excited to host a webinar that shares information about two of our CNCF programs, AmeriCorps-NCCC and AmeriCorps-VISTA. This gives our research grantees and their community partners an opportunity to learn more about these programs and how we may be able to link these programs to your communities. At a future date, we will also invite staff from Senior Corps and AmeriCorps State and National to hear more about their programs. We believe this webinar can be informative for all our research grantees. However, we thought this might be of particular interest to our 2018 Community Conversations grantees, as they are in the midst of conducting participatory research with community residents and partners, identifying community concerns, and taking steps to engage stakeholders in developing action plans to tackle the community identified concerns. We are hoping that the information presented today can help you and your community partners figure out how these CNCS programs may assist your work in strengthening your community. But before we begin, we'd like to cover a few housekeeping items for Adobe Connect, and I'll pass it on to Emily.
All right, thank you everyone for joining today. We ask that everyone remain on mute during the presentation until the question and answer session at the end. And if you experience any technical difficulties or have any questions during the presentation, just please let us know in the chat box below. We also want to let you know that this webinar will be recorded and posted online following the presentation. I believe that covers our housekeeping for today.
Okay, thanks, Emily. So just in terms of our format, NCCC will begin, and we have Tanya Gibson-Naiman, a Deputy Regional Director for Programming at the NCCC Pacific Region based in Sacramento, Amanda Cochran, Assistant Program Director, NCCC Pacific Region, Kevin Anderson, who's a Program Associate, he deals with social media and recruitment here at NCCC headquarters. VISTA will follow, and we have Craig Kinnear, Program and Budget Analyst from VISTA, and Melissa McNeely, a Program Impact Specialist. And then we have an example of how one of our research grantees, the University of Nevada, Reno, is working with our NCCC Pacific Region campus to develop projects that have been identified by the research they are conducting. So we have Melissa Gouge, Jennifer Willett, Assistant Professor, School of Social Work at University of Nevada, Tanya Gibson, and Amanda. We will then have just a very, very short remark from Dr. Melissa Gouge, and then we'll open it up to Q&A. So I know webinars can be a bit awkward, and we definitely want a chance to hear your questions and to hear from you directly. So during the webinar, please feel free to ask any questions or provide comments in the chat box, but during the Q&A, you could raise your hand, and Emily will tell you a little bit more how to do that, or I will at the end of this portion, and you have chances to ask questions in the microphone directly. So right now, what I'll do is I'll pass it on to Tanya and Amanda to talk about NCCC.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Andrea. This is Amanda Cochran, and I, as Andrea noted, am an assistant program director over here at AmeriCorps-NCCC at the Pacific Region, and I'll let Tanya introduce herself.
Hi, everyone. My name is Tanya Gibson-Naiman. I'm the Deputy Region Director for Programming here at the Pacific Region in Sacramento, and so our office is responsible for developing service projects for our AmeriCorps teams in 9 states in the Western Region.
And AmeriCorps-NCCC is one of the programs under the Corporation for National Community Service that you will be hearing about today. As Andrea noted, AmeriCorps-VISTA is also here, so they'll be talking about their program. So we're one of the branches. And NCCC stands for National Civilian Community Corps. We are a residential, team-based, and direct service AmeriCorps program, and we do short-term, high-impact projects. So that kind of makes us a little different than other AmeriCorps programs. Our teams of AmeriCorps-NCCC members, they live together, work together, travel together, and they do about 3 to 5 projects during the 10 months in which they're serving. So as you can see here, actually if you want to go back to the map, we have actually 4 different regions throughout the country. We have headquarters in D.C., and each region is responsible for a multitude of states. So we are out of Sacramento, California, and you can see we have actually 9 states in the western part of the U.S. We also have 3 other campuses. So one is in Denver, Colorado, one is in Vinton, Iowa, and one is in Vicksburg, Mississippi. So each of those campuses is responsible for that region, as you can see in the map. And then on the next slide, so our members, they're, you know, from all walks of life, all different types of experiences from around the country. They are 18 to 24 years old, and they might be high school graduates, they might be taking a gap year during college, they might have graduated from college, just kind of a wide range. And I know Kevin Anderson will be talking a little more about our members here shortly. As far as our projects, so we have also a wide range of projects. There's not too many limitations as far as what we can do. So we have projects with Habitat for Humanity building houses. We do fire mitigation work. We do mentorship in schools and after-school programs. We might support food banks, school gardens, do conservation work. It's really kind of whatever the community need is, we want to help support that. So as you can see here, as I mentioned previously, we are a direct service program, so just like that extra people power, hands and boots on the ground, getting things done. And we are team-based, which makes us pretty different from other AmeriCorps programs. So usually our teams have anywhere between 8 to 12 members. One member of the team is a team leader who's responsible for managing and supporting the team. The members on the team are between 18 to 24 years old. And our projects range between 6 to 12 weeks, typically. They might be a little bit shorter, but that's our basic time frame. And then we have 5 major areas in which we serve, so kind of theme areas. We work in disasters, so natural and other disasters. We do environmental stewardship and conservation work, as I mentioned. Energy conservation is one of our areas. We do infrastructure improvement, so like I mentioned, Habitat for Humanity type work. And urban and rural development. Those are our 5 different areas. Really, we can do pretty much any type of work, though our limitations are we cannot do anything inherently political or religious. We can't do direct fundraising, and we cannot do any direct work that's supporting a for-profit partner. Beyond that, not too many limitations. All right, and then the next slide. Our project sponsors, so as I mentioned, there's not a lot of limitations beyond really the for-profit side as far as who can be a project sponsor. So our sponsors are typically nonprofits, faith-based organizations. We have a lot of governmental organizations, whether it's federal, state, or local, that are project sponsors. Public schools, colleges, universities, tribal councils, Native corporations, as you can see, just a wide range of organizations that can be project sponsors and support a team. As far as the application process, really it's directly working with each campus. So as you saw in the map, there's 4 different regions. Each region has a campus and staff like Tanya and I that work directly with our sponsors to help develop projects. So the last slide I have will have some contact information for each of the regions, but basically if you are interested in being a sponsor, you would reach out to the program office and they would help support you in developing a project. So similar to what Jennifer will be talking about as far as our Reno, Nevada partnership, I've been working closely with her in that development. From there, you would submit a project concept form. So that's just a short document kind of initially introducing the idea of a project. And then really just working with the campus throughout that process for the full application and all the details of the project. And then the next slide talks about what teams receive from us and what we ask our sponsors to provide. So from our program, we have 15 passenger vans that are provided to each team. They have a food and a laundry budget, so their needs are covered with that. Camping and cooking gear, so if camping is part of the project, we have some camping gear. If a project requires some tools, we have some limited tools. They get personal protective equipment like hard hat, eye pro, all that fun stuff to keep them safe. And then we also cover them with workers' compensation. As far as what we ask of our sponsors, each project is very different, so sponsors know what best to prepare, how to best prepare the team. So the sponsors would provide orientation and training on the project, regular ongoing supervision, any tools and materials relevant to that project. Housing is the big one, and that can be very creative. If you're interested in being a sponsor, we can talk more about housing. I won't delve into it too much here, but that can be a wide range of options, whether it might be a church basement, working with partners to see if they have some housing available. It could be with a church basement, YMCA, all kinds of different options. Really, they just need a safe space for the team. Access to bathroom, shower, kitchen are kind of the minimal space that we require. Of course, the team needs sufficient, meaningful work to keep them engaged in the community. Each member of the team, like I said, between 8 to 12 members, they need to be working 40 hours a week. So it's quite a bit of work. They can get a lot done in a short amount of time. And then another piece of our program is service learning. So not only are they going into communities and doing work, but they're also learning about the impact of that work and why it's meaningful to the community. And then the final slide here, as I mentioned, so those four regions you saw on the map are broken down here. So we have the Pacific region, which is us out of Sacramento, and then each of the consecutive regions there. You can see their email addresses. And then we have a national request for applications document. It's actually linked in the file section here on the Adobe Connect meeting page, so you should be able to see that. And I definitely suggest that you check that out and look at the information on there, because there's some different dates and all the contact information is also on that document. And I think that's it. Thank you so much. I think we're handing it off to Kevin Anderson now to talk a little more about our members.
Great. Thank you, Amanda. So obviously this webinar is talking a lot about programming, but I thought it would be valuable to give you guys a glimpse at who our members are. If you're going to be, you know, potentially giving them a bunch of work, you should know what kind of young adults you're signing up to have. So as Amanda mentioned, these people are between the ages of 18 to 24 years old. We do have a team leader leading each team, which can be any age. There's no upper age limit. They just have to have a valid driver's license to use the van. Our members also have to be U.S. citizens or lawful permanent residents of the United States. And then beyond that, that's kind of the two basic eligibility, but then there's more soft eligibility things. They have to be willing to relocate and serve for 10 consecutive months on a variety of projects. They don't get to choose which projects that they are going to go on. We assign those to them, so they have to be flexible. And then they do not have kind of work or education or skills requirements. There's no barriers to that in them joining, but they do have to have sort of motivation and altruism, which we review as part of our assessment of their application. So there's a lot of factors in that. We look at their references. We look at a motivational statement that they write. And we use these to decide who is kind of fit to serve. Once they are invited, they receive a conditional invitation, at which point we conduct a criminal history check and a medical history check to make sure that that they're fit for service. And this includes sex offender registry track and felonies and misdemeanors and all that stuff. There are exceptions that allow us to let people in based on their history, but that's too much to go over for right now. But we do our due diligence in that. One other quick thing I wanted to mention that I didn't get on the slides is that just talking about in the character of our members, we actually did some formative audience research of our own recently, and just wanted to shout out a few things. So one, I have over 90% of our members agree that volunteer work aligns with their personal values, which is just kind of saying that the people doing this work, the people who are applying to serve in our program, this is exactly what they want to be doing. And then 95% of them say volunteer work is something to be proud of, which kind of helps to reinforce that. And then a large majority of them are joining for the purposes of gaining life experience, wanting to make a difference, to be a part of some kind of meaningful work, and then also to learn new skills. So these people who are joining our program and who are applying, by and large, our mission is to serve communities and develop leaders, and these are leaders that we are developing. So we definitely have a lot of power behind the work that we're offering. And that is about it when talking about our members. So I'm going to go ahead and pass it over to Craig and Melissa from VISTA.
Thanks, Kevin. As Andrea said, my name is Craig Kinnear. I'm a program and budget analyst at AmeriCorps VISTA. AmeriCorps VISTA is one of the oldest continuing federal anti-poverty programs, having been around since 1965. Over 220,000 VISTA members have served in high-poverty communities since that time. VISTA has four core principles that guide our work and the work that sponsors and members accomplish in their community. The first principle is ending poverty. A VISTA project's goal is to move individuals and communities out of poverty rather than making poverty more tolerable through short-term services. The second is empowering communities. As a way to empower communities, the VISTA project engages residents of the low-income communities in the planning, development, and implementation of the anti-poverty project. The third principle is building capacity. To build capacity, VISTA members leverage resources, including financial resources and volunteers. They create effective management systems, build community partnerships, and expand outreach to populations in need. The fourth principle is creating sustainable solutions. VISTA members build the capacity of organizations to continue to address poverty long after the VISTAs are gone. VISTA members leave behind new and expanded resource networks, management systems, communications networks, and partnerships to continue to support anti-poverty efforts. The annual impact of the work being done in the field is impressive. In FY 2018, the program placed over 8,000 members at 4,500 different sites across the United States and its territories. VISTA members leveraged over $195 million in cash and in-kind resources to support their projects. In addition, over 720,000 volunteers were mobilized to work on anti-poverty programming. And now I'd like to turn it over to Melissa McNeely.
Thanks, Craig. Hello, everyone. So now I'd like to talk a little bit about the VISTA sponsor application process. So we have a two-step process for the VISTA sponsor application. First, the interested organization submits a concept paper in the eGrant system. eGrants is a separate system from grants.gov. So please be sure that you are using eGrants. The organization creates an account and uploads and submits the concept paper in this platform. CNCS reviews the concept papers to gain a better understanding of the proposed project and to determine if the activities and the organization are in alignment with VISTA's programming priorities, which include economic opportunities, education, healthy futures, and veterans and military families. The proposed project must be focused on anti-poverty work, and the concept paper must clearly demonstrate how the proposed VISTA project breaks the cycle of poverty and helps uplift communities. Concept papers that do not clearly align with VISTA's anti-poverty mission will not be approved. VISTA resources cannot be used to carry out activities for which your organization has already received CNCS ORE grant dollars to carry out. We're happy to have VISTA resources support the work, particularly the implementation of action plans. However, this must be separate from what the Community Conversations grant money is supporting. This fiscal year, we implemented a new request for concept papers process. The concept paper submission deadlines are now on a quarterly basis, and the next deadline is July 1st. If CNCS approves the concept paper, the organization is invited to submit a full application, much of which is exported from the responses that the applicant has already provided in the concept paper. CNCS field staff are available to provide technical assistance and guidance during the writing of both the concept paper and the full application. Now I'd like to briefly touch base upon some member recruitment ideas. So after the application has been approved and the CNCS field staff
will help your organization develop a service opportunity listing to begin the VISTA recruitment efforts. All listings are posted on our AmeriCorps application portal. At that time, the organization will also develop a VISTA assignment description, or a VAD. The VAD is a required member position description for each VISTA member. It serves as a powerful guide for recruitment, for planning and implementing activities. It can be used to assist with selecting a VISTA candidate, guiding and supporting members during their year of service, and assessing performance by measuring their work against the stated goals and objectives. VISTA has marketing materials available for sponsors to use during the recruitment efforts, such as brochures, flyers, posters, postcards, and an online photo library, just to name a few. You should promote the benefits of service, such as the education award, non-competitive eligibility for federal jobs, and relocation assistance. It's important to emphasize how your organization and VISTA will provide professional development to members once they're onboarded. You should post jobs on sites like Idealist, Indeed, LinkedIn, and also use local job boards. You can also use social media and bulletin boards to get the word out. Lastly, develop recruitment contacts with both local colleges, universities, career centers, and community organizations. Forge connections with the Rotary Club, Lions Club, Lynx, Top Teens of America, or other social organizations in your area, and ask to give a presentation about your program and any VISTA openings during one of their meetings. And I'll hand it back over to Craig.
Thanks, Melissa. The last thing we'd like to touch upon are benefits for both the members and sponsors. If you become a VISTA sponsor, you'll want to know all of the benefits available to VISTA members so that you can support them and inform candidates during the recruitment process. In addition to benefits which range from a living allowance, health coverage, and child care support, non-competitive hiring eligibility for federal jobs, and an end of service award, we have many others that aren't listed, such as student loan forbearance and relocation assistance. To learn more about VISTA member benefits, visit the VISTA webpage or VISTA campus. Sponsoring agencies also receive numerous benefits from hosting a VISTA member, such as strengthening their capacity, recruiting and managing additional volunteers, expanding partnership opportunities in their community. The impact that VISTA members make in their communities is invaluable. Please reach out to CNCS field staff if you have any questions, and thank you for considering VISTA. And now I'll hand it over to the other Melissa.
Thank you so much. Thank you to Tanya and Amanda, Kevin, Craig, and Melissa for providing very brief overviews of your very large programs that you could have talked about for a very long time. As the program officer for all 16 of the Community Conversations grantees, I've worked with our newest cohort of grantees who are conducting participatory research alongside communities across the country. Doctors Jennifer Willett and Mary Hilton, PIs at the University of Nevada, working with their community partner, Communities in Schools, and their amazing group of student scientists, are working together to address slow violence and its impact on the local community. More to come on what slow violence is in a minute. Their collaborative efforts to determine research questions, methods for data collection, and analysis of these issues led them to identify the need for sidewalks in the Sun Valley neighborhood. And they are currently collaborating with our NCCC program and local stakeholders to implement this much-needed public infrastructure project. This is only a part of the action plan that's been identified by the team, but is exemplary of one way that CNCS programs can help you as our research grantees implement your action plans that are developed in the course of your project. Jennifer, I'll turn it over to you to describe your project and your work with NCCC so far.
All right, thank you. As Melissa said, my name is Jennifer Willett. I'm an assistant professor at the University of Nevada, Reno. And along with my colleague, Mary Hilton, we've been working on making the invisible visible. So this is most of our research team. We have two faculty members. You can see me in the back right there, and Mary is behind the camera, unfortunately. But the key to our work is that we hired 15 high school students from local Title I schools to be our co-researchers, and we call them youth scientists. So they helped us determine the methods and they collect data through photography and interviews. And what we're working on is documenting flow violence through the photo voice methodology. Flow violence focuses on the hidden environmental degradation that occurs in historically marginalized communities. So this is something like air pollution, which you can't usually see, that impacts asthma rates in communities of color. By photographing these hidden flow violence problems, we can make them visible so that we can start to work on them. We recruited our youth scientists from the Title I schools because they live in the impacted communities. So whereas you and I might not be able to see the hidden environmental problems, they live this every day and they know how to document them appropriately. We definitely guide the youth in the process, but we do try to stay within topics that they want to work on and that they are passionate about. So far we've been documenting things like winter flooding in homeless populations, lake flooding in an elementary school, and inadequate garbage collections. Coming up tomorrow, actually, we're taking a big field trip to look at wildfires and mining pollution, and we're also going to meet with the governor's office, which we're super excited about. But for the remainder of this presentation, I'm going to talk about what they've been doing with another one of their areas of focus, which is the lack of sidewalks and ditches and flooding in Sun Valley. So Sun Valley is an area near Reno. About half of the youth scientists live in this neighborhood. It's really only 3 miles from Reno. Many people walk back and forth from Sun Valley, but it is not technically considered part of Reno. It's this strange situation where it's an unincorporated area, so there is no local government. Instead, it's governed by the county government, which is not in Sun Valley, and they are focused on county-level initiatives rather than these hyper-local initiatives like sidewalks. Sun Valley has a higher poverty rate than other areas. Sun Valley has a high Latino population. Mobile homes without infrastructure are common. And then other types of community-level infrastructure like drainage systems, sewers, and lighting are very weak. There are some really great nonprofits in the area, but there really aren't that many operating. Because there isn't a normal drainage system, there are ditches on the side of the road. You can see that on the right of this photo. So this is important because we live in a desert, so there are flash floods, and then the water can flow into the ditch. However, as you can also see in this photo, there are no sidewalks, so residents have to bike or walk on the road. So as you can imagine, this creates a really dangerous situation, particularly for kids. If a car comes too close to you, there is nowhere to go except into the ditch. And then the water can fill up in the ditches because they get blocked sometimes, or there's just too much water because it's a flash flood. And that makes it hard to see where the ditch is, and then people fall in. So all of our youth scientists have a story of when they or a family member fell in the ditch and couldn't get out. Our youth scientists are particularly interested in the lack of sidewalks and the ditches around the schools in the area, which you can see here. A few years ago, a student was hit and killed by a car while waiting for a school bus near a ditch. So that accident is often referred to when talking about these issues in this area. And the youth scientists are also very concerned about the safety of their younger siblings who have to walk to work alone because their parents are working 2 to 3 jobs. So keeping this problem in mind, we began developing partnerships for solutions at our site visit, which was really great. In this photo, you can see our youth scientists along with Andrea, Melissa, and NCCC and Nevada volunteers. So this was really the beginning of coming together to move towards a real solution. So I think that as Amanda from NCCC and I kept connecting, we felt that addressing the sidewalk issue was probably the easiest first win of all of the complicated issues the youth scientists wanted to work on. We were fortunate that NCCC Sacramento office is just over the mountain, so Amanda can come over, and she's been over several times, so we can meet with people together. And NCCC has also built sidewalks in another Nevadan community, which gives us a model, and it also helps Sun Valley feel comfortable that NCCC knows what they're doing and can hold to their word and get this done. So together, NCCC and our research team, we met with the county commissioner that represents Sun Valley, who was very supportive and had actually built sidewalks before. She connected us to the Sun Valley General Improvement District, which manages some of the infrastructure in lieu of a formal local government. We, Amanda, the youth scientists, and I presented to them, and they were very supportive, and they are actively trying to help us move forward with the county to get this done. We've also been able to meet jointly with some of the resources that need to be in place for an NCCC team like housing, and we're continuing on moving this forward. We just met with the General Improvement District again last week, and they're connecting us to other county members who can give us the proper authorization to build sidewalks. And I really feel like this is coming together and we're making progress because we are a legitimate team. You know, the problem came from the local residents. The university supports the residents, and we have a resource in CCC that wants to work on these issues. I think this goes really, really far when working with communities that are sometimes skeptical of outsiders, like a lot of communities in Nevada are. And I thought that we would have to argue for this issue and advancing solutions a lot, but we really don't. I mean, they see us as a team that can get things done and provide a solution for their needs. So I'd like to conclude fast by talking about the benefits for our research team. Clearly, we are involved in more than just the research, and that does create more work, but it has been hugely beneficial for our research to have the backing of AmeriCorps behind us. We've been able to get into other communities to do research by discussing AmeriCorps and the potential that we can start linking things up together. And these are communities that I've never been able to get in with just the university backing. It's also been really beneficial for our youth scientists to see that they can create change in their communities. And it's helped us frame how to see the hidden environmental problems. These are sometimes hard for them to grasp because you can't see them, right? So you have to think about how to photograph them creatively. But when we think about it from a solution-focused perspective, we can see these issues easier. And that made their work just more trustworthy, which is making the research better, too. And then it's also just been really fun. I think that probably anybody who's been an assistant professor can say that research is a little isolating sometimes. So having a team behind me is great, and accomplishing things is fun, and seeing what these kids do is just really inspiring. So thank you for the support, and I will pass it along.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. We cannot wait to hear updates on this work, and we're so happy that this partnership is proving fruitful for progress on this one element of your action plan. And I'll hand this off to Andrea to facilitate the Q&A session.
Okay. Tanya and Amanda, I do want to hear from your perspective of the University of Nevada. So let me just open it up, and then I'll just ask you to talk a little bit more about that.